is okay. Seems like everything is rolling our way. Till you look the devil in the eye, you know the bastard's one big lie.
So be careful with your heart and what you love. It's good that it was sent from above. It's what you do and not what you say. You're not part of the future, then get out of the way.
Come on, baby, take a ride with me. I'm up from Indiana down to Tennessee. Everything is cool as can be in a peaceful world. Lay back the top and ride with me. I'm up from Indiana down to Tennessee. Everything is cool as can be in a peaceful world. Hey.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is not the telephone number. And someday I'm going to remember that. Someday I will accept the fact that the 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. That's 855-915-WMFO. If you like to spell things on your phone, if you're on mobile, 855-915-9636. Stick around because later tonight we're going to show you how the sausage is made.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone likes a sausage. No one wants to know how the sausage is made. But thanks to Russian hackers and WikiLeaks, we got some rare insight that confirms a lot of my theories about the worst of what goes on in American politics.
Yeah.
So we'll be getting into that.
American politics as usual.
Is the heat wave working out for you there, Lisa Nichols?
You know I love this heat. My only problem with it, I'm actually training for a marathon right now. And it's seemingly...
No, you're not. Not on
difficult.
That, you're not.
Yeah.
Not really? You're not running in this, are you?
I've been waking up really early.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's still warm.
Yeah, but it's not as bad
as
it is.
No, it's just bad when you walk out of the house and you feel like you're walking into a sauna.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if anybody sees me running around, you know, often do Wakefield Lake, Dorchester, and you see me on the side of the road, please come to my help, pick me up, and transport me somewhere that has a defibrillator or some sort of medical attention.
No, because I go out to get lunch and I see people who I know
sweating.
Don't exercise that much or are just starting to exercise out running in this heat. And I'm like, I hope you've got life alert or you've got the ambulance on speed dial because this is not the time to take up an exercise regimen unless you're going to go do it indoors.
Yeah, it was
in an air conditioned gym.
More less difficult when I was doing it back in April.
Yeah.
In this heat. Well, what's so strange, though, you know, normally in the summer we have these heat waves, you know, 95 plus. Just for a couple days, we get some sort of a relief.
Right.
Yeah, there's no relief. I feel so bad for the people that don't have air conditioning.
We get about two or three-day spells of temperatures over 90, and we're like, oh, heat wave. This is legit. This is like, I haven't seen a heat wave like this probably in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I was living in Alston and the power went out because the grid was getting overloaded from everyone using their air conditioning.
We knew this was going to happen, though. They said it in, you know, springtime. It's going to be one of the hottest summers on record, and look what happens.
I knew it was going
to... But then again, I'm going to be okay with Christmas time having that nice 70 degrees again.
I knew it was going to happen when we had a warm winter. Last winter. Mm-hmm. This coming winter is probably going to be brutal, because that's typically how it goes.
Brutal as in...
Cold, 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 cold.
I'll take the cold. It's the snow. I do not like shoveling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we may not get a lot of snow, but we're definitely going to get a lot of cold.
I'll take the cold.
And on that note, we should probably get into the news type things. Let me cue up the news theme here.
No, not again. 3 weeks in a row, Derek. This is what you're doing to me.
I just don't understand why you don't want to be the very best, like no one ever was.
I don't like fun. I told you.
It's clearly you don't like fun.
But,
you know, you should at least like a heart that's true, whose courage will pull us through. You teach me, and I'll teach you.
I hate you.
Pokemon.
You're the worst.
Yeah. So, what do we got going on in the world?
Today in local news, we learn problems for the MBTA never end. Advocacy groups are alleging in a federal complaint that the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority violated civil guidelines in its cancellation of its late-night bus service and subway service. The complaint filed Tuesday by Vice President of Conservation Law Foundation claims that the MBTA didn't properly measure the impact on low-income and minority riders before ending its service in March. The T's fiscal board control voted in February to end late night service, saying it was not cost effective. Rafael Moraes, an attorney for the Conservation Law Foundation, says the decision to do away with the late night service disproportionately affects low income and minority communities. Quote, we are not asking for the original late night service to be reinstated. We are asking for the T to come up with something else. There are already a number of proposals already on the table. Those proposals include additional all-night service routes during the week and on the weekends. The foundation and two other advocacy groups are required to conduct an analysis that shows whether minority and low-income riders would be disproportionately affected and flawed because it included all of Boston's population. So, yeah, they're proposing, let's do an all-night. That's the cheaper option. Not so much. You know, the MBTA, as I said, they initially offered this late night service. We had talked about multiple times on the show how, what was it, for about 2 years, they extended this kind of as on a trial basis to see how many people were actually using this late night service. And what happened? Nobody was using it. The T was not making any money from it. So, of course, they got rid of it. What a lot of people don't know is that the T itself has to conduct this analysis, as this advocacy group is saying, to determine if it's going to have some sort of effect on certain communities, certain minorities, or certain low-income groups. They're saying kind of mixed results. They left it gone. Now you have this coming up.
Yeah. So they've tried this over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's a loser. It's always been a loser. I'm talking about the late night MBTA service. There just isn't that much demand. And this case is a waste of everybody's time. And the worst part of it is
it's a waste of money too.
Well, it's a waste of the dollars that the MBTA
does not have. And that's the thing. I mean, you can't run a system with a group that doesn't have any money.
The reason this case is a waste of time is because there is no history of the MBTA offering overnight service.
Mm-hmm.
This was a trial run. And the history of the MBTA, everybody who grew up around here knows, you better be out of the bar at 12:30 because that's when the last train is running.
Of course. You know what? And this is not like New York and many other cities that do have later last calls.
Right.
I mean, for the most part, in your Boston bars, you're maybe pushing 1:45 if you're lucky. Nothing else is happening after 2 a.m. And essentially, that's what it was for. I get it that people do work late and rely on public transportation, but what is the percentage? What's the percentage that it's actually going to be cost effective? If this wasn't, though, in Boston or any other city, when you do not have revenue coming in over a project, they're going to get rid of it. It's not a Boston thing. It's not...
The percentage of people relying on public transportation at night should be zero because the service historically did not exist. Mm-hmm. That's why this lawsuit fails. That's why this lawsuit is a waste of time. Massachusetts has never had all-night subway service. It doesn't make sense. So for 70 years or 100 years, however long the T's been in operation, however long we've had subways and buses, it is 100 years because we had the first subway station in America. Mm-hmm. So it's more than that, I think. We didn't have all-night service.
Well, essentially with cases like this, what you need to do is try to prove that there is a significant burden placed on a specific group because of this getting rid of it.
But that burden is going to be...
But there is no burden because, as you just said, there was no previous late-night service.
Right.
So you can't tell me that people are depending on a late-night service to get to and from work when it never existed.
That burden is going to be assessed based on the historical context. And the historical context is we don't have overnight subway service. Mm-hmm. If we had had overnight subway service for the last 20 or 30 years and they suddenly shut it down because they can't afford it, then you have a lawsuit. What you have now is a special interest group and a couple of lawyers trying to get their names in the papers. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the judge throws it out immediately so that we don't waste a lot of public tax dollars on this.
No, and I don't understand why the MBTA isn't coming out and actually saying that they're bringing up past analysis, these studies that they did on their own, and saying, we actually don't know what any of this information says. It could have some sort of effect. No, all you have to say is it doesn't matter.
I'll tell you why. Because counsel has advised them not to talk about pending litigation. That's exactly why they're doing that. In national news, in Baltimore today, all charges were dropped against three police officers in the death of Freddie Gray, a black man who died from neck injuries while being transported to a Baltimore police station. Four officers involved in Gray's arrest had previously stood trial, resulting in three acquittals and one hung jury. State Attorney Marilyn Mosby blasted Baltimore police at a press conference today, accusing them of bias during the investigation that hampered Mosby's attempts to bring the cases to trial. So you got one hung jury, mm-hmm. three acquittals, and those were the strongest cases. So rather,
those were the first initial ones.
Rather than waste more taxpayer dollars... And I do applaud Mosby on that angle. She's decided to drop charges against, basically to drop charges against everybody. So there will be no retrial for the hung jury. There will be no more trials for the remaining three police officers. She brings up a very, very good point that should be understood in this. As much as I disagreed with the medical examiner's finding that this was homicide, and as much as I disagreed with Mosby's decision to prosecute on murder charges, mm-hmm. rather than involuntary manslaughter, which you might have won, by the way, I do agree with her assessment that the police are part of the problem in this investigation and in this prosecution. And she said very clearly, I'm used to working with police on investigations.
Not going against them.
They thwarted me. Mm-hmm. She pretty much said they thwarted me at every turn here. And mentioned the fact that some of the police who were involved in this were conducting the investigation. Now, the police union in Baltimore has come out and said that's a bunch of nonsense. But this brings up a much bigger issue, which is when a case like this happens, can we trust the police to investigate themselves? As far as I'm concerned, the answer to that question is no. Not because I don't trust police, not because I think police are corrupt, not because I think police are out to murder black people, but because the appearance, no matter how thorough and mm-hmm. honest and unbiased you are, the appearance to the community is going to be that there was corruption, that there was interference. And the other side of it is, if you're a cop, and you're looking at possibly sending your partner or your buddy to jail, are you going to be forthcoming in that investigation? I think that's a legitimate question to ask.
No, I mean, you hit it exactly on the head. I mean, you're incredibly right. But that's what these trials really demonstrated, how challenging it is to prosecute law enforcement
yeah.
in the community. And one of the biggest things that stood out, what you just said, was the appearance to the community. We're dealing with communities that already have a lot of mistrust in law enforcement. This will only intensify it. So what's the option?
I think when you get into a situation like this, what we need to have is some sort of third-party group, whether it is a community organization made up of local lawyers, politicians, mm-hmm. community leaders, possibly the FBI, although the Justice Department is stretched so thin, and we need them in so many other places that may not be the best use of their time. Or National Guard has a lot of police serving. National Guard has military police. The Army has military police. Those are groups that you could bring in. So if the city police cause a problem, you know, something happens with the city police.
I was
going
to say, but what would be...
The first thing you could do...
How significant would the crime have to be for a police officer being on trial to then have to have a third party group coming in?
I think any case involving a suspect killed by a police officer should trigger an external review.
Absolutely.
And if it's state, or if it's city police or it's town police, you can have the state police come in and do it.
No, because essentially, if we're talking about just a court, it doesn't matter if all the cops know each other. You know pretty much everybody in that courtroom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but beyond that, I'm just talking about the investigation part of it. So that we can try and figure out what went wrong. Because that ultimately is the biggest casualty in all of this, is that we still do not know what happened to Freddie Gray, which means we still do not know how to stop it from happening again. And we know what happened the last time. A couple of blocks of Baltimore burned down, the city was flooded with drugs stolen from a pharmacy, and the murder rate went through the roof. There is a lot of public interest in making sure this doesn't happen again. So why can't we set it up so that when police are accused of killing a suspect, when police are accused of murder, as they were in this case, rightfully or wrongfully, I'm not saying that was the right decision, but rightfully or wrongfully, that you do not have those same police or any police from that same organization conducting the investigation.
You can, as much as you're saying that you're unbiased, there's always going to be questions floating around it.
Go get some stateies, go get some military police, go get somebody from the National Guard, set up a community board, or have a statewide task force. We have the Governor's Council here in Massachusetts.
You know what's so crazy, though, in today's day and age, where this is becoming so incredibly frequent, you are going to have a group that is their sole job to do. And that's reality.
But that's fine.
Of what's happening.
That's fine, if that's the case.
But I mean, if that's going to make it so that in every city, when you have a situation like this, it is going to be a fair and honest trial, then so be it. I think that's a decent sacrifice.
It would. I mean, obviously, it's going to cost some money to do this. But it would give people in aggrieved communities, like the Black community, like the Hispanic community, like any poor community in the United States, another layer of recourse. And
well, it almost restores your faith in the justice system.
Well, I look.
Because, I mean, think about what the community is feeling right now after hearing this announcement today. Anger, saddened.
Absolutely. Whereas if you had had a third...
Even more so than it already was.
If you'd had a third party come in, if you'd had the Justice Department come in from the beginning and say, we're going to look at this, they may have come back and said, don't prosecute anybody because you're not going to win any of these cases. You know, they don't want to prosecute Hillary Clinton. I can't imagine they'd want to prosecute some Baltimore police officers. But you may have saved a lot of taxpayer money by not taking this to trial and getting those three acquittals and that one hung jury. That probably cost a lot more money than it would cost to get some military police to come in, question everybody, file some reports and say, this appears to be what happened. And Freddie Gray's death may have been a tragic accident. I don't believe that any of those police were deliberately trying to kill him. There is nothing in the video or in the actions that we've heard about to suggest that someone had a vendetta against him or somebody said, let's kill this guy and be done with him or anything like that. It looks like an accident. We still don't know what happened in the back of that van.
Of course.
And we should, at the very least, have that answer.
Now, just remind me, I know that the van did make 6 stops during the start to the end of the course that the van was going on. At any point, were the doors open? Was he checked on?
They checked. They put somebody in the back of the van at one point and would have seen him at that point. And he'd asked to be taken to the hospital rather than to the police station because he had neck pain. But we
come to find out he has a spinal cord injury, which ultimately led to his death.
We don't know if it happened in the van. We don't know if it happened when they took him down. Mm-hmm. We don't know. And
which, again, like you said, was surprising that we ruled this a homicide.
That, I thought, was politically motivated and a mistake.
Of course.
You could have ruled it an accidental death.
Mm-hmm.
You could have ruled it manslaughter, you know.
But at the time what was going on, Derek, in Baltimore, that is not what the community wanted to hear. So when you talk about if we're basing this on a political decision, I can understand why they
And that's where the politics get into it. But the question is, how do we prevent it from happening again? How do we deal with it going forward?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have the police, because we focus on this here. Black Lives Matter has serious, legitimate points that it's making that aren't just about the black community, by the way. If you are an American, what they are fighting for affects you, and you should be on board with it. And you should be paying attention to what they're talking about. Yes, if you're rich and white or middle class and white, you're going to get treated differently by the police up to a certain point. And God help you if you get that one cop that isn't recognizing your white privilege and decides to treat you like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody could be a victim of this kind of treatment. Anybody. And this is not the way the police are meant to operate. The cops will tell you that themselves. So as long as we have the police investigating their own, we're going to have this problem. And we need something, I believe, at the federal level, not at the state level. I don't want to leave this up to the communities. We need legislation at the federal level that says if a law enforcement officer is accused of killing a suspect, that investigation will be conducted by X. We're going to send in justice. We're going to send in military police. We're going to send in state police. Whoever we've got, we're going to set up review boards in every single state to look at these cases. That would be concrete, meaningful change.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, on the basis of just bringing justice to the person that died, the families, and the community. But again, just to reiterate, it is so important, the view of the community, because this is what the problem is and why there is such a distance between law enforcement and many of these communities. Whether we're talking about Ferguson, we're talking about many of the city, Baton Rouge, Baltimore. We have, as we talked about multiple times on this show, black men are fearing white officers.
Right.
White officers are fearing black men.
That
nothing is ever going to change.
No.
This is one of the messages that the Black Lives Movement is pushing, and that's one of the movements or focus that we should be looking at.
But here is a concrete political goal that Black Lives Matter could adopt.
Mm-hmm.
No more police investigating themselves. You have an outside third-party review in these cases.
Black Lives Matter right now has completely strayed away from its main focus because too many people are involved. What it was meant for, what Black Lives Matter that we've mentioned, and that it is good. There's too many people involved now that are skewing the message.
It's not that there's too many people involved. It's that there is no clear leadership.
But people are adopting it on their own.
There is no clear leadership. When Bobby Seale ran the Black Panthers, everybody knew what the Black Panthers stood for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to change the message, you take it up with Bobby Seale. Nobody was taking it up with Bobby Seale. You need strong leadership that is going to lay out an agenda that is going to say, this is what we're fighting for. This is what the protests are about. It's not just about walking through the streets and chanting. We're aware. We should be aware.
Because that's pretty much what is depicted and what people think when the word comes up, Black Lives Matter.
If you're not woke by now, I don't know what is going to wake you up. I have no idea. If you don't understand what is happening in this country to black Americans, poor Americans, Hispanic Americans, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what more evidence you need. Get your head out of the hole and take a look around. Because we need to wake up on this issue. this can be solved. But it is not going to be solved with people chaining themselves together across highways, with people burning cities down, with people marching through the streets. Yes, get out, vent your frustration. That's awesome. That's fine. We have the freedom to do that in this country. The question becomes, what are you doing after that? Mm-hmm. What are you working toward? What is the goal? The civil rights movement, when Martin Luther King was holding his marches and holding his sit-ins and holding his rallies.
But he
was
had
about,
a significant agenda. He had a significant
yes,
message.
He had an agenda.
Happening.
That's the difference. He had an agenda. He wanted equal treatment. He wanted an end to segregation.
Yeah, but there was,
he wanted an end to poll taxes.
There
and you
was
know what?
A leader.
He got every bit of it.
But also, it was working with government. And that's a huge thing. And for the new president that's going to be coming into office in November, that needs to be a priority.
But this
not
is,
by having the DNC, having all the mothers
right.
of the people that were victims of crimes by cops to come up. That's all nice and good.
That's
but that is, yeah, no, it's pandering.
It's pandering and lip service. And everybody knows that.
But the biggest problem is there needs to be a connection with government. There needs to be some sort of leadership, and there isn't either. Nobody's doing anything in Washington right now, and you know that.
No one's doing anything in Washington because they are allowed to get away with doing nothing. If you have a million Americans camped out on the Washington Mall every single day saying, when are you going to pass some legislation? We'll get some action out of that. But that's not what's happening right now mm-hmm. because no one is even proposing a solution. All they're doing is saying we want the police to stop killing us. Yes. Everybody,
because essentially right now all that's happening
stop.
Is you have the DOJ coming in and saying this is a problem. We're going to start prosecuting and it's done. That's
yeah.
it.
This isn't
what
about,
kind of justice is that?
This isn't about a few bad cops. This is about a system. This is about systemic problems in the United mm-hmm. States that can and should be fixed, that should not even exist in the 21st century.
And this is why all of it starts. This is why all of it happens. When you have neighborhoods like Baltimore that are pushing black young adults, black men, for $25 tickets, communities start becoming angry. That is where it starts. That's where tensions happen. This is where violence starts.
Yeah.
And people are dead because of it.
But we've
also... That's the reality of what's happening.
As I've said, we've got to ask the question and answer the question of why the police are afraid of the American people. Why are our police officers afraid of the poor? Why are they afraid of black people? Why are they afraid of Latinos? Because every one of these officer-involved shootings that I see scared cops. And that tells me you're not training these guys right. Or something in the culture is poisoning these guys against the communities that they're meant to serve.
Mm-hmm.
We got to fix that. That's a much more difficult fix. Outside investigations of officer-involved deaths is an easy fix. Congress could do that in a month. And it could be law within a year. This is something to campaign for. In national news, there were some nervous moments in Washington today as Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu. Sergei Shoigu. Yeah, this it was a Japanese defense minister. I'd be like, oh, Shoigu. I got it. But this is Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu announced that his country had strengthened its military presence in the country's southwest. In a meeting broadcast on state television, Shoigu said Russia had self-sufficient troops in Crimea and four divisions of military on Europe's doorstep, including two missile brigades with mobile-launched Iskander missiles, known to be capable of carrying nuclear warheads. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby said the moves, if true, would run counter to efforts to de-escalate tensions in Ukraine. So, a little saber...
We're in more troops in Crimea.
Little saber rattling on the part of the Soviets.
Now, here's
the
my
Russians.
Question to you. Do you think that they are beefing up security or beefing up their military because of what's going on and all the talks with Kim Jong-un in North Korea?
No, I think this has everything to do with a lot of NATO military exercises that have been mm-hmm. taking place and just sort of... NATO has been very quietly realigning its assets in the direction of Russia, and the Russians are well aware of this. So they're beefing up their assets on the border in case anyone on the NATO side decides to go a little crazy. It is far more likely. And the real concern on the part of the Pentagon would be that all of that military presence signals a potential move to try and grab some of Ukraine.
Is this just, so there is actual tactics that are trying to be made, or fights acquiring land? It's not just beefing up your chest and saying to the world powers, look how big I am.
It's partially telling Europe to back off, but it also, this is what's interesting about this.
Is there anything coming from Europe that is trying to engage? Europe has always set Russia to some sort of line. You know, they're pissed off because of what happened in Ukraine and Crimea, but Europe always has had a pretty upper hand on the situation.
Yes and no.
To a point.
Because, as I've said on the show in the past, I think Europe would stand by and let Russia have Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody is going to war over Ukraine. Now, the interesting thing about this speech from the Russian defense minister, which was broadcast on state television in Russia, is you're saying one thing. You're saying, look, we have all of these defenses against the Europeans. And you can take that statement at face value, or you can say, well, you also have all of these military assets right on the Ukrainian border. So what are you really doing here? And that's what's going to keep people awake down in the Pentagon for the next couple of nights.
And I believe I've asked you this question before. Do you think we're going to get to a situation where Russia then acquires Ukraine, but also starts moving into, we're talking Belarus and going. At what point then does Europe make a move and say, all right, that's too far?
Knowing the history of the players,
because we've talked about this before, and you know, that really fine line that Russia's been playing, they kind of backed away, and again we're hearing them beefing up their military. Are they going to be making a move?
Knowing the history of the players involved, if France were to announce that it was leaving the European Union, or if Germany's leadership was to become destabilized, a vote of no confidence called against Angela Merkel, which would basically throw her out as prime minister, I think Russia would be much more likely to make a move than it would with the world as it is today.
If you had asked me that question a few months back, before knowing what was going on in Europe currently, and what people are saying, like the summer of terror in Europe.
Yeah.
If you had asked me that question, I would say absolutely not. France would not be backing out of the European Union. There would never be anything against Merkel for that to happen. Where we're currently sitting in Europe, it's bad. And you have no idea what could happen, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be changes of power? Are there going to be more people exiting the European Union following suit of what happened in Britain?
There's a little bit of adventurism on the part of the Russians in all of this. And the three countries most likely to stand up to them in the immediate days following any sort of military action would be the United Kingdom, France, and Germany.
And but the United Kingdom is pretty much on its own now.
The Belgians would jump in with whoever else, but the counteroffensive would be led by the United Kingdom, France, or Germany. Now, I'm Russia. I'm looking at the map. The United Kingdom is now in its own internal turmoil. So you can more or less cross them off the list
of
potential adversaries.
What are they going to do to you?
France, Germany, and, of course, the big bear in the room, or the big gorilla in the room, is the United States. It would take the United States a little bit of time to deploy and be able to engage Russian forces if something happened in Ukraine, if we did it at all. So, I'm Russia, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at my options. England is now not a problem for me. The United States is in the middle of an election year. So, I know that between October and December, I pretty much have an open window where the United States, at the very least, is going to be slow to respond. If France or Germany, more particularly Germany, destabilizes during that period of time, Russia is going to march into Ukraine, and they will take at least the eastern half of the country.
it's so strategic what they've been doing, and it's completely like a chess game. And you're exactly right. Russia is basically sitting back. United States is also sitting back, but they have their back turned towards Europe, anything that's going on in Russia. Where Russia has always had, no matter how many people are saying it within the intelligence community, Russia's had the upper hand because, exactly, they're sitting back. They're waiting for that strategic move for that to happen. Knowing what is going on in the United States right now, we are, as you said, in an election year. You have complete turmoil right now in the Eurozone. And now you have, okay, Brexit. That's gone. Cross that out. You're exactly right.
But at the end of the day, Russia does not want to get into it with the Germans. And the Germans do not want to get into it with Russia.
But that is why I question, once they acquire Ukraine, are we now going to start seeing, understanding the conditions that are going on in Europe, what if another country wants to have some sort of Brexit style leaving the European Union?
Yeah, that's...
Then do they start moving? How big does it get before we wake up and say, no, you can't do that?
If France got to a point where they said, we've had enough of immigration, we're out, Germany's attention would be...
Yeah, but so many of those countries, and especially in France and Germany, are sitting on that edge.
Right.
We cannot take any more people in.
But here's what happens. If France says we're leaving, Germany is now distracted. Germany is now putting its efforts into getting France back. And that may open the door for Russia to go try and grab some Ukraine. The real opportunity would come if the German government is destabilized between October and December. Then, whether or not anybody leaves the European Union, Russia's pretty much got free rein to walk over there and then see where the dust settles.
And what about the financial problem that's happening in pretty much every single country in Europe?
Don't forget the United States in that, because we're having the financial problems too. The results coming out of Wall Street this week for the second quarter have been abysmal. Mm-hmm. Everybody is missing their targets. And everybody is missing their targets by significant margins. I think we can call it the Pokemon Go effect. Everyone is out playing Pokemon Go, so they're not purchasing goods and services.
Yeah, I saw how Nintendo
other than Pokemon Go
crashed, realizing that they had no shares in Pokemon Go.
Yeah, they're going to make money off of it. Don't worry. Nintendo owns Pokemon. They own the Pokemon company, so they're getting licensing fees. They're not going to get filthy rich off of this. But I don't think the economic thing plays into it quite as much as are these countries, if I'm Russia and I'm thinking of making a move, I'm going to ask the question, are these countries capable of responding? How quickly are they capable of responding? Do they have the political will to respond? If you've got instability in Germany and the United States and the United Kingdom, France is not going to go it alone. France is not going to go do that on their own.
They never have and they never will.
So that becomes your moment to go in and maybe grab some land somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you could take all of Ukraine, but you could probably get eastern Ukraine, or you could get parts of Ukraine.
Half of Ukraine wants to split anyways.
You might even be able to get some of Georgia back, because mm-hmm. they've been trying to take that back for years now, too. So it's an interesting story that came out today. They got completely buried under everything else that happened today. But this is an interesting one, and this is one of those stories that you want to keep an eye on, because any sort of Russian military buildup is either for show or for nefarious purposes. And with Putin pulling the switches...
But if we have to, and as you say all the time, you need to look at history, and what does history show? The times when he does have that military beefed up, what happens? Crimea was the last thing.
Not always.
A lot of times.
When Putin's pulling the levers, the opportunity for mischief is always there here on WMFO Medford.
Well, we didn't talk about Russia enough. Today in sports, we learned Russian athletes will be packing their bags for Rio. The International Olympic Committee faces an unprecedented backlash from anti-doping agencies for athletes after it decided not to impose the blanket ban on Russian teams competing in next month's Rio Games. Instead, it ruled the 28 individual sports federations, which make up the Summer Olympics, are free to decide the fate of Russians on a case-by-case basis. Dick Pound, the former World Doping Agency president who authored a damning report
Dick Pound.
Yeah, to mess me up. Report interstate-sponsored doping in Russia last November claimed the IOC's decision and revealed there was, quote, zero tolerance for doping unless it is Russia. The IOC had a huge opportunity to make a statement, and it squandered, Pound said. Under the IOC's ruling, each federation will be required to produce a list of Russian athletes they believe are clean, which will be checked out by an arbitrator from the IOC and the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Any Russian with doping conviction will be automatically barred. Many were quick to point out the inconsistency that Russia's ruling with the doping conviction, given the other countries will be able to send previously banned athletes.
Did you ask me last week, Lisa Nichols, if the International Olympic Committee would ban the Russian athletes?
And you said no.
Yes. I believe I did say no, and I believe...
because you actually, and many of our listeners don't know, you have a magical ball that looks into the future.
Yes.
And you are generally correct.
It's called history.
I actually have one up on you because I did pick the Republican nominee for vice president.
That you did.
So... and what is it, Derek 4000? It's a one.
My magic crystal ball is called history and pattern recognition. And as I said last week, it wasn't going to happen because the International Olympic Committee could give two hoots about the integrity of sports. They're concerned with making money.
And it's all about the money.
And their advertisers want the Russians to be there so that the Coca-Cola and Adidas and Nike and Geico and whatever other Sony branding will be seen in Mother Russia.
No, that too.
If the Russian athletes don't go, all of those billions that we spent putting up Coca-Cola signs all over the place won't be seen by the Russians. So why are we backing the International Olympic Committee?
And that is actually exactly what Putin's saying. He's not happy. He spoke yesterday in front of, I believe it was like 100 or so people, athletes that were banned, were going to Rio. And he said, you know, a gold medal in Rio doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
Because Russians aren't going to be there. It was a very, you know, pomp and circumstance kind of speech.
Can I tell you something? If I'm Russia and I actually care about my athletes, I'm going to say, please, give us the ban. We will have the only Zika-free, poo-free athletes, or the only Zika-free athletes who haven't been dipped in poo on the planet. We'll have the only ones. Everybody else, go get your Zika and your pink eye. We're staying home.
But it is an interesting move coming from the IOC because,
but
essentially what they're doing, no, of course it's predictable for them to say, no, of course you guys, we're not going to put a blanket over every single Russian athlete to be banned from going. What's interesting though, they're putting it in the hands of each individual sports federation.
Right.
So it's kind of taking a step back and washing your hands clean and saying, well, you know, if any Russians can't go, it's not because of us. It's because of each individual sport. So for the majority, Russian track and field, nobody's going. I think they just pulled about three people from sailing. Those are your big ones that were always floating around, the doping.
Some of the Russian track and field athletes have managed to qualify. They cannot compete under the Russian banner. So Russian track and field remains banned. Nobody watches track and field anyway, so nobody cares. Okay. Yes, the International Olympic Committee, as you point out, Lisa, is playing the classic game of pass the buck. Oh, we didn't say the Russians couldn't come. So they can go to the advertisers and say, hey, look, Russia, they're coming. And then it's up to the individual federations. Any Russian athlete.
Which is interesting, though, because these individual federations need to do a complete analysis over each of these athletes. So we're not talking about a decision that is made over in 24 hours.
Yeah, the bar is incredibly low. Any Russian athlete who passed a drug test not administered by Russia in the last year is technically eligible. They, on a case-by-case basis, they can go after people.
Yeah, but if you have a separate panel that's looking at each individual athlete,
it's not going to happen. You gave the federations, you gave the sports federations a week to pull this off.
I want to say last minute, many athletes are going to be pulled just on the basis because each of these sports can say, hey, it took us a while. It took us about a week and a half to conduct this.
You gave,
and then you have sponsors are still happy because they.
You gave the federations a week to make a decision. you gave them the lowest possible bar for allowing Russian athletes in, which is any clean dope test outside of Russia in the past year. That's good enough. That's the minimum standard.
Yeah, but none of these doping tests are clean. All of them across the country.
That's why it has to be
international.
That's why it has to be.
Though are dirty.
That's why it has to be outside of Russia.
Whether we're looking in Europe, we're looking in Asia. We just had that big scandal that happened in Africa. In South Africa, you could not be a runner.
Stop bringing up the fact that doping happens everywhere. That's not
fact.
What this is about.
But that is fact.
Well, but then let's bring it back to the fact that this is a political witch hunt against Russia.
Exactly.
Because of their activities in Crimea. And we're back to this again.
Which you've been saying for so long.
Yes.
Putin actually came out during his speech and said that.
Putin is correct. I agree with him 100%. Hail Comrade Putin.
This is completely for political purposes. People across the world do not want Russian athletes, not because they have integrity for the game. No. They have integrity for the Olympics. They don't care. This is about banning sports, which is so incredibly important to Russia. Oh, here's one way we're going to get back at Russia for all the crap that they're pulling.
People don't want Russia competing in the Olympics because Russia is good and Russia tends to win a lot. So if Russia's not there, all these countries that can't beat Russia suddenly have a shot. The only ones who really don't care are the Kenyans, because the Kenyans are going to win all the distance running competitions anyway. Usain Bolt is going to win all the track and field, with or without the Russians there. So there's a few cases where nobody gives a hoot. But in general, yeah, if you could knock Russia and the United States out of the Olympics, suddenly all these other countries are like, we have a chance. That's when China wins everything, because they have massive state-sponsored programs, too.
And they're doping. Yeah. Well, in food news, we learned Boston, there is a brawl over booze. Mayor Marty Walsh's effort to wrest authority to grant additional liquor licenses for bars and restaurants in Boston from the legislature has divided a city's state house delegation and reignited old tensions between Walsh and his former Beacon Hill colleagues. Walsh and State Representative Michael J. Moran of Brighton dueled over the weekend for the support of Boston lawmakers and asked them to pick sides on Senate legislation that would include a capital in a broader proposal to unchain cities and towns from having to petition lawmakers for additional liquor licenses. Walsh argues that the century-old practice of Beacon Hill setting local caps on these licenses, a control of legislature, is counterproductive to economic development. In Boston, advocates for low-income and minority neighborhoods say that it has been traditionally underserved by local liquor licenses, stunting growth efforts.
Can I tell you something? Can we stop right there?
Yeah, nobody's opening. That's PR 101.
We don't need more bars in the poor neighborhood. We don't need more bars in the poor neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's good that you're being underserved.
Yeah. Well, Moran counters that Boston lawmakers should maintain control because they have a particular understanding of the city's neighborhoods and, quote, their special charms and traditions, which is also crap.
So they're what?
Special charms and traditions.
Because there's nothing more charming than a rundown corner of Dorchester.
Right. Yeah. I believe this is an argument that you and I both had many times talking about liquor licenses in Boston, and I think that it is unfair what is going on in the city. And you said, yes, we should absolutely set the cap to what it is right now. What a lot of people don't understand, and many people actually do, it is not cheap. If you would like to buy a liquor license in Boston, say there is downtown Boston, let's use Financial District for an example. A restaurant closes. That restaurant then sells their liquor license. For the majority of what you're looking at is about $150,000
plus. Yeah.
You are lucky to get it at that price. If you're even looking in the suburbs, I know somebody that just acquired a liquor license in Gloucester. That cost them $95,000.
Yeah. Somerville, they go for $150,000.
It's unbelievable. What happens? Because each city, each town is delegated a certain number of liquor licenses. Yeah. What is trying to happen here, and it's been going back and forth on the state level too, because Baker tried to pass, what was that? The Senate did adopt this from Charlie Baker. He called it the Municipal Modernization Package. And it was this bill basically that said, we're going to keep it as it is. Marty Walsh, of course, in Boston, he doesn't like that. He likes the monies. So he wants more restaurants and more bars to come into the city.
Well, this, keep in mind, is one of the last great corners of corruption in some of the communities around here, because political leaders can decide, oh, no, no, we don't do that. Political leaders, through influence, mm-hmm. can decide who gets those liquor licenses. And you do it by going to the alcohol control board or whoever's issuing the license.
Multiple times. This isn't a one-time deal.
And saying, listen, let's make sure Joe gets this one. Make sure Bob gets that one.
And if there is any sort of vendetta or some sort of reputation
shut people up.
With a certain restaurant group, right. a bar group, you're not going to get it. Or you're going to find the most difficult hoops to jump through to get it.
But history tells us that you can have multiple murders at your nightclub.
Absolutely. And then you can open a brand new spot right behind city, Fenway Park.
Right. And the city's not only not going to take your license away, they're going to let you open up another location. So,
because not only does it deal with who you know, but it's also how much money you have, and money talks. It's the same thing when we discuss when the zoning permits going on with many of these groups that are happening and building in the Seaport District over by Longwood Medical Area. You have to go to a board and ask for zoning permits. If anybody on that board has a problem with you, forget it. You are not going to be getting it, or are you going to find the most difficult way to get it?
It's a little tougher to hand out favors to your supporters through a zoning board, because there's always one or two well-meaning architects or engineers that wind up on the zoning board that just don't care what any politician has to say. Like, this is the way you're going to do it, and I'm not interested in anything else. But the alcohol board? Oh, you can peddle influence through that all day long. And this is what happens. Big money interests give money to politicians and say, I want to open more bars. The politicians turn around, make sure they get the liquor licenses. And as long as there is a small controlled number of liquor licenses, this is going to be the case. Marty Walsh, I would imagine, I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine he's not a drinker, so he's not looking for places to go himself.
As we heard at the DNC on Monday.
I would imagine he's got some favors to repay and would like to have a few more liquor licenses to hand out to people who are good to Marty Walsh in his run
for
mayor.
I'm sure that he has Boston Neighborhood Restaurant Group. What? Patrick Lyons Group.
Yeah.
So many of these. Hey, I'm opening a new place up right near Fenway. Of course.
There's no restaurant workers licenses. Union in the city, so I don't think he's going to fight that hard. For these extra liquor licenses, but you never know. You never know. In tech news, you'll like this, Lisa, I think. Do you like apples?
Product or the food?
The food.
Oh, they're all right.
Yeah.
I like them cooked. So, I don't like them raw.
We're talking about Apple in technology, but not that company that makes the awful iPhones.
So Apple the food?
Apples. Yeah, the little fruity things that you eat. First discovered here in the New World. May now have a much longer shelf life. A paper published in Physics of Plasmas revealed a new method of keeping apples crisp, blasting them with a plasma tool similar to a medical device used to disinfect wounds. The plasma tool delays formation of a bacterial biofilm around apples, and it's that biofilm that causes apples to soften and rot after they've been picked. Treated apples lasted several weeks longer than untreated apples, and the process may work on other kinds of fruits and vegetables.
Oh, why are you messing with my food?
So, when I start
understand, and the whole concept is great, and technology is amazing, but when you're beginning a sentence with film around the fruit and injections,
But that's what happens naturally. Mm-hmm. The reason your apples go bad is because there's bacteria. Okay, the bacteria is growing on the apple, and once it gets all the way around it and creates a film on the apple, then it starts to rot the apple. So that happens as part of nature.
No, of course. I mean, what this concept essentially could do for us, it could have, I mean, not only just if you go to the grocery store, the longevity of the shelf life at your own home, but we're also talking about transportation. So you can be transporting further distances for your fruits and vegetables.
But here's the other
thing.
It's
a great thing for farmers.
No chemicals. So you're using plasma, which is just heated gas.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not throwing chemicals all over the apples. You're not freezing the apples.
At what point in the process do you do that? Do you do it after picking or do you do it while they're on the tree?
They do it after they're picked. So you pick the apples, blast them with the plasma.
So there's probably chemicals prior to this.
There are chemicals used to grow the apples in most cases, but you're not spraying the apples with disinfectant.
For the most part, on the apples.
Yes.
So you're now creating a film around the apples.
But it's still one less chemical that's in the process. You know, you're not putting anti...
So you're trapping the chemicals.
No, you're
with
not...
plasma.
No, you're using plasma. No, you're using plasma to vaporize the bacteria. That's what the plasma... What the plasma does is it vaporizes the bacteria that's on the surface of the apple.
Mm-hmm.
So you've basically got a perfectly clean apple with no bacteria on it whatsoever. It takes a couple of weeks for that bacteria to grow back and do any damage. This is a pretty interesting little technological solution that they've found here. And I look forward to eating my plasmid apples.
Mm.
Is that what it's going to be called? A plasmid apple?
Are we going plasma apple picking in the fall?
Yes. You have to bring your own plasma device, though.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have one set up at the end, and you can just like toss your apples through the plasma, and then you got great apples.
It works.
At the end.
I'll do it.
While you sing and dance and rue
the... It's an extra ingredient added to your apple pie that you'll be making.
While you sing plasma. And dance and rue the day you agreed to go apple picking.
Apple picking's great. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Well, if you're Italian or a tomato, you're probably enjoying this weather. If you're anybody else, you got no love for it. And put me in the list of... today's day 7 of the heat wave. Tomorrow will be day 8. Friday, the heat wave allegedly ends. It's only going to be in the upper 80s and humid instead of in the 90s and humid. So take that for what it's worth. The National Weather Service... in a statement issued at 12:50 on July 20th, so that was last Thursday, has said that there is an elevated fire risk across the state of Massachusetts. That is still in effect. So please be very aware of that. Everything is tinder dry in certain parts of the state. Don't be smoking outside. Don't be throwing cigarette butts out the window. Don't be lighting off your fireworks. Not the time to be doing that until we get some rain. You want to lay off of that. Tonight, temperature is going to fall down into the upper 60s if you're lucky, low 70s if you're in the city. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high in the low 90s. It will once again be a dry heat for all the good that does. It's
ladies,
a dry heat.
Your hair. It's good.
We will struggle to get below 70 on Thursday night. Friday, thunderstorms come in. We think. We hope. There's an 83% chance of rain that is desperately, desperately needed here on Friday. Temperatures will struggle to reach 80 on Friday. Low in the mid-60s Friday night. Saturday clears out, mostly sunny, low 80s. A little bit higher on the humidity, but not too oppressive. Possibility of an afternoon shower. Temperatures in the low 60s Saturday night. Sunday and Monday, we get rain, actual rain moving into the area. Highs in the upper 70s, lows in the mid 60s both nights. So you're not going to be putting away your air conditioner anytime soon, but there is some rain in the forecast. And a very good possibility, so I've been told, that we might be breaking out of this pattern, that the jet stream may be slipping further south.
Yeah, where are those nights like 80 degree day, 85?
So that we will get some cool, refreshing Canadian air instead of the nasty tropical southern air that we've been putting up with. When we come back here on WMFO Medford, did you hear... all of the other things that happened this week. Don't forget, you can find us online, facebook.com, Big Picture WMFO. Facebook.com, Big Picture WMFO. Go there now. Sign up. Like us. Like us today. You will love us tomorrow.
I like that.
How about that? Like us today. You will love us tomorrow. We'll be back.
Lovable.
We'll be back right after this.
How can you tell a blade chuck roast from an arm chuck roast? The blade chuck roast has a long, thin cross-section of the shoulder blade bone, and the arm chuck has a small, round arm bone. Both make excellent pot roast. The arm chuck has less waste, fat, and bone, but the blade chuck is usually more tender and can be oven roasted if it's USDA Prime or Choice. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook